This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 16th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 387. Happy St. Patrick's Day. La Ela Palrig Sunadiv. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to the difference maker behind a Vancouver monument to the Irish who have built Canada. And on the big deal feature, the Justin Trudeau circus is finally over. Here comes the Carney government. New Prime Minister, but same Liberal Party. My guest is Mario Canseco of Research Co. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast.
I, Mark Carney, do solemnly and sincerely promise and swear that I will truly and faithfully, and to the best of my skill and knowledge, execute the powers and trust reposed in me as Prime Minister.
Canada has its 24th Prime Minister. On March 14th, Mark Carney took the oath of office and he unveiled his 24-person cabinet, heavy on Ontario ministers, because that's where the Liberal voters are. It was 5 days after the Liberal Party crowned him the new leader, and one day after Justin Trudeau said goodbye with a 30-second Twitter video clip. He really was Canada's first social media Prime Minister. Mark Carney's buzzword is building, but is the former central banker building a government or building an election campaign to keep the Liberals in power? To answer that question and more is my guest, Mario Canseco, president of Research Co. When could that election be? And has Carney really moved the needle for the Liberals in the first quarter after Justin Trudeau brought the party down to the lowest of the lows?
At some point in the next couple of weeks, we'll figure out what the date of the election will be. We may not have an opportunity for the opposition to vote against the government in the House. Mark Carney is talking about traveling to Europe and discussing trade, so you don't want to do this when you're not in Ottawa. So that, I think that buys them a couple of weeks for Canadians to try to figure out if they want to go with Mark Carney, try to see if he's the best option here. I think the emphasis in Ontario and the absence of Corina Gould from the cabinet certainly suggests that they view the main enemy as the Conservatives. I don't think we're going to see a Liberal Party that is moving more to the left to try to get that young vote, but ultimately a party that is trying to fight for that 23% of Canadians who told us that they were leaning towards voting Conservative and are taking a wait-and-see approach at this stage. I think that'll be the key for the next couple of weeks. How do you re-engage with those forces, and can you actually sustain the momentum that you're having at this particular time because of everything that this entails? You know, a lot of people didn't know who Mark Carney is. Now he's the head of government. He'll have an opportunity to essentially present himself to Canadians in the next few weeks, and that'll essentially decide whether they call the election quickly or whether they wait a little bit.
And on March 9th, the Liberals chose Carney by a landslide in that online election, which looked like it to me that it was predetermined. A lot of people have questions about how that looked. It not only did the vote look like it was predetermined with the results the way they were, and how Chrystia Freeland in her own riding and Corina Gould in her own riding underperformed. You thought they would have carried their own ridings, but they didn't. And then the event, the televised event in Ottawa, looked very stage managed. It didn't look to me like a traditional political party, political convention. It didn't look very celebratory. It just looked very perfunctory. What stood out for you with both the results of the Liberal Party's online election for the leadership, as well as that event on TV? It seemed to me like the past few months were about gaining media profile and bringing money back into the party after losing both donors and supporters to the poly of Conservatives.
Well, there might be people who donated to the Conservatives or were thinking of donating to the Conservatives who are now having second thoughts now that the Liberals are once again in place, in a place where they can run a campaign, where they can compete with the Conservatives. I thought it was a little bit strange that Justin Trudeau spoke before Jean Chrétien and not after Jean Chrétien. Maybe that's the way that they wanted to design it. It's difficult to try to gain an audience on a Sunday, even without NFL football. I think that was part of the essence of why they did things the way they did. But I think it's also trying to create a contrast between Poilievre, who's known as a firebrand and very feisty in his speeches and in the way he discusses where he wants to see the country go, and Mark Carney, who's more subdued, who's going to take a few shots, but maybe not as in such a strident manner as what we've seen with Pierre Poilievre. So part of it was also trying to tone down the idea that you're going to have somebody who's going to scream a lot, who's going to complain, who's going to have a significant level of emotion when he's at the podium, to have that contrast. I think it's an important thing for the Liberals to do, but you have to make sure that the balance is there. You don't want to have a situation where you have a candidate who seems bored, you have a candidate who seems unenthused. The idea of what happened with Michael Dukakis in the United States in 1988 certainly comes to mind. You know, is there a way to portray yourself as somebody who knows what is happening, but also appealing to Canadians who want to see some fire in the belly?
That speech he gave, his acceptance speech, that did come after Chrétien. I mean, Chrétien, 91 years old. Mark Carney was having his last Sunday afternoon as a 59-year-old. He turned 60 on March 16th. Chrétien just had more piss and vinegar than Mark Carney did. By going faster to the polls, they're not going to have time to really refine Mark Carney or redefine Mark Carney for Canadian voters after being someone who has been at the highest levels of international finance for so many years. Do you think that might be a mistake to go to the polls that quickly before Mark Carney has a chance to really get his feet wet?
Well, I think it depends on how the situation unfolds in the next few days. Maybe he'll love this. He'll love to travel. He'll love to talk to people. He'll figure out a way to look more engaged with an audience, because it's something that you definitely don't get unless you're in elected retail politics. Part of it is going to have to do with the reaction that Canadians have towards what is happening in the United States with Donald Trump. And to me, that is also part of what is pushing the conservative numbers down, and so many people who are worried about voting for the conservatives because of what we've seen before. Your advisors or close friends or candidates wearing MAGA hats. Ideologically, this is fine 6 months ago, but now that the effects of the Trump presidency are being felt across the country, you can be sure that some of those images are going to be featured in ads or on social media postings to try to paint Poilievre as somebody who would just follow Donald Trump's bidding. Now, there's a flip side to this, of course, which is you can't really establish an emotional connection with voters unless you talk about something very specific that you want to do. And it's easy for Poilievre to position himself in first place when he can go on and say that everything is broken, that nothing works, that he's going to make it all better. Now you have a candidate who is also vying for change. You know, it's not going to be a continuation of the Trudeau years necessarily, but that also depends on how Carney can establish that emotional connection with voters, and especially those age 35 to 54. To me, that is the demographic that will define the election. People who have young children or aging parents are experiencing the healthcare system in different ways, are worried about the economy and jobs and housing. How is this group going to react to the idea that 2 months ago they were dead set about not voting for the Liberals because of Trudeau, and now they have Carney and they can make up their minds in a very different way?
Now, one of the words that Carney used in his speech after being sworn in at Rideau Hall in the news conference, he referred to Canada as a client to the United States, a very technical term, very business term. That's where he comes from. Didn't refer to them so much as a historical ally, that the United States is Canada's historical ally, Canada's friend or Canada's neighbor. Of course, we're going through a rough patch right now, but he referred to Canada as a client of the U.S. But now Donald Trump, of course, has been in the White House for almost 2 months. When will Mark Carney have his first call with him? When will Mark Carney travel from Ottawa to Washington, D.C.? And do you think that he is a little bit hesitant about doing so, because that meeting with Trump in the Oval Office, whenever it does happen, could produce some attack ads for the Conservatives, for instance? I mean, the Liberals have got to be thinking about that.
I think he will, but the examples that you cite certainly show how things can go. You know, Trudeau gets on a plane, goes to Mar-a-Lago. Long story short, it's about stop calling me the governor of Canada, dude. Like, this isn't going to work. I'm the prime minister of a sovereign nation. And nothing happened. You know, he said it more often. He called him Governor Trudeau. He kept saying about Canada becoming the 51st state. So appealing to the good graces of somebody who doesn't have many doesn't work very well. You look at the situation with Ford, who essentially travels after he starts to take a much meaner approach, if you will, to the situation in the United States. And, you know, we see how Trump can behave in the Oval Office. What is going to happen if he suddenly has a fit, if he starts screaming at Mark Carney and says, you're the governor of Canada now. And you know, we saw what happened when Zelensky was there. So as a liberal campaigner, do you want to mitigate the damage that could come by having Trump yell at Mark Carney and then having those 5 seconds played ad nauseum before every YouTube video?
Let's say elections are about the future, but how can Carney run away from his past? And how can the Liberal Party, with most of the same faces in cabinet, in Carney's cabinet, most of the same people behind the scenes from the Trudeau years, still involved with Carney, how can they run away from their record? And you know, how can the Conservatives not use that to their advantage?
Well, I think they will try to. And we've seen it with the ads, right? You know, Carney is a continuation of Trudeau. They sent out this exceedingly long press release today where they're saying that this is essentially Justin Trudeau's fourth term. It can be complicated to try to recreate what took you to, let's say, the last time that we checked this, which was early January, to 43% of the polls nationally. More than 50% in Ontario and BC. And if we had had an election the first week of January, the Liberals would have been reduced to levels they haven't seen since 2011 under Michael Ignatieff. But that, now it's a completely different situation. And for the Liberals, I think it's more about trying to appeal to the public that is very concerned about Trump. And you know, we ask a question about how closely you follow stories whenever something big happens, and the numbers that we have for the Trump tariffs are insane. So this suggests that we might have a larger voter turnout this time around than we did before. And there's people who usually don't pay attention to politics who are suddenly very interested in what can happen. And they're new to this. They're going to be looking into Carney versus Poilievre, maybe to a lesser extent where they vote for some of the other parties. But if you can court that new voter who is suddenly preoccupied with the future of the country, that could help immensely. I mean, we haven't had a magnificent turnout in federal elections since 1988, which, curiously enough, was also an election related to our relationship with the United States. So a lot of it is not going to be just courting some of those federal conservatives who didn't vote for the Liberals in 2019 and 2021, but finding that new voter who maybe is in his mid-30s or mid-40s and suddenly pays attention to politics, because now what Donald Trump is doing from the White House has an effect on his or her life.
Now, what does this mean for British Columbia, where David Eby has wrapped himself in the Canadian flag and doing a lot of elbows up photo ops? We've never seen it like this, where a politician in BC, a premier in BC, has been able to just leave the budget behind and jump onto another issue to distract voters. Of course, David Eby says it's existential. But what do you think it means for BC, as well as for David Eby and the NDP, especially when we've got a bit of a divided conservative opposition?
I think there's a couple of reasons for this. One of them is what we saw in Ontario. You know, Doug Ford gets his third majority mandate, albeit with a few less with fewer seats than what he had before. But you know, you're able to capitalize on saying most of the problems that we're seeing are caused by what is happening with Trump. It wasn't a campaign about healthcare delivery or job creation or environmental stewardship. So David Eby sees that and goes, well, maybe I can capitalize on this too. I'm going to start to connect with people on this. And you know, we've seen the relationship of some of the BC conservatives with Donald Trump, discussions in the past, MAGA hats, specific moments when they're defending him, 5 people who voted against something that was clearly designed to make him fall into a trap. And now 3 of them are forming their own party, allegedly. You can capitalize on the breakdown of the official opposition by essentially saying, you know, we are going to take this opportunity to put Canada first and to do things differently. Mind you, that is, it's a significantly shorter runway. You know, you have 2 or 3 months to continually bash Donald Trump and try to see where things are going, but people will return to their usual concerns, which in British Columbia are housing, the economy, and jobs and healthcare. Delivering on those issues is going to be crucial because you do have an opportunity to capitalize on the way the voting public feels about you. We have the example of the 2020 election, called at the height of the pandemic. People were very happy with the way things were being managed. And you get the NDP closer to 50%, which they've never had again. So I think they're making the most of the situation that Donald Trump has essentially brought us everywhere. But it's not a policy that can last 4 years. It worked out very well for Doug Ford because it's a significantly short campaign and it happened almost immediately. And he said, you know, I want to continue to be premier long before Donald Trump is ineligible to run for office again. I don't think David Eby has a runway that large.
So thanks again for joining us on the podcast. Mario Canseco, the president of Research Co.
My pleasure, Bob.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
InFocusTaiwan.tw. Lai vows to nullify foreign adversary China's annexation ambitions. President Lai Ching-te pledged to strengthen national security and said China's ambitions to annex Taiwan and eliminate the Republic of China remain unchanged. Proposed measures include reinstating the military trial system, tightening requirements for residents from China, Hong Kong, and Macau to obtain Taiwanese identifications, and limiting access to Taiwan for individuals with United Front backgrounds. In ABC News Australia, U.S. influencer who snatched baby wombat leaves Australia following visa review. American influencer posted a video of herself snatching a baby wombat away from its mother. The now-deleted video showed Sam Jones catching the joey on the side of an unidentified road and carrying it to a car while a man laughs as he films. Prime Minister Anthony Albanese also weighed in, saying it was an outrage. In Kyoto News, over 3 million people gamble online despite ban in Japan, say police. Around 1.24 trillion yen, which is 8.4 billion US dollars, is being gambled annually, even though the practice is illegal, a police survey showed. The National Police Agency released its findings of its first study on virtual casino use, following recent cases involving athletes and celebrities, amid a lack of public awareness about its illegality. The survey covered around 27,000 people aged 15 to 79 nationwide between July and January. It found that 3.5% of respondents had gambled at virtual casinos. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In Willamette Week, Rat Way Sanctuary rescues and nurtures rats with advanced medical needs. It also sells portraits painted by the rats themselves. Rat Way Sanctuary, a decentralized sanctuary for Portland rats, started rescuing rats in December 2023. Rats often come to Rat Way from Multnomah County Animal Services, exotic animal rescue organizations, found strays, and direct surrenders from pet owners. In Crosscut, Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell pushes to renew democracy voucher program. Seattle voters receive four $25 democracy vouchers in the mail during elections. They can choose to give some or all of the money to the local candidate or candidates of their choosing. More than 106,000 residents have used democracy vouchers to contribute more than $10 million to local candidates since the program started. Seattle voters first approved the program in 2015, through a citizen initiative that created a 10-year property tax levy to fund it, approved by 63% of voters. And check out thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com for the stories behind these headlines. Exclusive: Taylor Swift's Eras Tour contract for BC Place Stadium revealed, and daughter of Vancouver man jailed in France says 4-year wait for trial is inhumane. Read the stories behind the headlines. Go to thebreaker.news and bobmackin.substack.com.
That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
It don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone. You won't
Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to people making a difference. A special St. Patrick's Day edition of the virtual Nanaimo Bar to Brendan Flynn, the executive director of the Ireland Canada Place. George Wainbourne Park in Vancouver is going to be the home of a permanent tribute to the ongoing contributions to Canada of Irish immigrants and their descendants. I asked Brendan Flynn for an update on his 20-year quest to create the national monument.
We're fully focused on unveiling in September of this year, unveiling the memorial to the Irish in Canada at George Wainbourne Park in Falls Creek to celebrate what the Irish have given to Canada since before Confederation, right up to the present day, in many aspects of Canada, including the Maple Leaf flag, Confederation, freedom of the press, recognition of women, Vimy, ice hockey, you name it. Anything the Irish have touched seems to have made Canada a much better country.
Who are some of the great names that will be on here? I know one of them will have to be Thomas D'Arcy McGee, father of Confederation, born near Dundalk.
Thomas D'Arcy McGee, born in Carlingford in County Louth on the 13th of April, 1800. So this would be 1825, sorry. This April would be his 200th anniversary. You know, he helped bring about a united Canada. His vision for Canada from east to west helped bring the CPR to Vancouver in 1886. Momentous journey through the Rocky Mountains and Cambie, of the Cambie Bridge fame. He helped bring the railway through the Rockies, dare I say, nearly impossible task at the time. Lester Pearson, who gave Canada the Maple Leaf flag, your great grandfather Henry James Mackin, right, who oversaw the largest lumber company in Coquitlam in the early part of, or in the part late part of the last century, or whatever, and. That lumber company fed hundreds of men every day, and they produced glulam beams and glulam posts and whatever. Great technology came out of that work, but it was the largest lumber company in the world. So these are people that have given to Canada. The Lionsgate Bridge is another feature of the project of people that the Guinnesses of Dublin built the Lionsgate Bridge and sold it back to the province. I mean, you know, it's just incredible contributions we take for granted today, but the Irish made these things happen, just like the Massey Tunnel, George Massey from Enniscorthy in County Wexford. He spent 20 years working with the province and the cities of Latner and Delta to bring about the tunnel under the Fraser River. And now, because the structure is needing to be upgraded seismically, etc., a new tunnel is proposed 100 metres upriver. These are the things that make a country great and make people, give things to people that help them in their lives and help the country prosper. And it's the we've been working on Ireland and Canada Place since 2005, and we're determined to finish the project. And hopefully governments will come on board, people will donate, even a small amount will be a great help. And we'll all celebrate this if we can get everything finalized by next September. That's the date we're working on.
Thank you for being on the Breaker.News podcast, Brendan Flynn. Gaurav Magad, and have a great St. Patrick's Day to you.
August. Have a great St. Patrick's Day yourself, Bob. Take care. Thank you.
You can find out more, including how to donate. Go to IrelandCanadaPlace.com. And you can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to Bob at thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of March 16th, 2025. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 16th of March in 1872, Wanderers FC beat Royal Engineers AFC 1-0 in the first FA Cup in London? The FA Cup is the oldest soccer tournament in the world. And in 1965, Canada's 24th Prime Minister, Mark Carney, was born. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. And introducing bobmackin.substack.com. Visit me there too. Sign up for the free email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. Or follow The Breaker News for news as it happens on X, formerly Twitter. And you can support The Breaker for as little as $7 a month. For more information, go to bobmackin.substack.com. Happy St. Patrick's Day!